he gave a lot of warnings. He said transcendence needs to come first. As a person has to work on transcendence. And that's, what's transcendence? Getting the mind beyond the world. Getting the mind beyond its own ideas. Getting the mind beyond forms. No matter how abstract. Because any form at all is something distinguished from something else, which means it's still part of what he called samsara. It's still part of the world of conditioned existence. It had a cause, the form. It will have effects. So transcendence is to move the mind beyond forms, including thought forms, you know. And he says transcendence, it isn't, it's easy to get off track at one's attempts at transcendence, he says, because one, we're ignorant, two, we're selfish, and three, we have our preconceptions. So in order to approach the real teaching, he said, one has to overcome one's ignorance, which is what Socrates is all about, who claimed to know nothing except the fact that he knew he didn't know anything, which Socrates says is the beginning of wisdom. So overcoming ignorance is one step. It's, I know I don't know. Who are we? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? What's the universe? You got to get over thinking you know. We all got our ideas, but basically, don't know. Selfishness—that's really easy to get over, right? Okay, I'm altruistic now. I love everybody as myself. Yeah. So that's another discipline. Rooting out selfishness, and then preconceptions. You have to kind of approach it with no preconceptions of what it's supposed to be like. Because if you have preconceptions of what it's supposed to be like, what if it's not how it's supposed to be? Then you're not going to recognize it. Oh, it's not this, because I know what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be this. And you don't know. We don't know what it's supposed to be. Like, say you want to meet a sage. You probably wouldn't recognize one if you met one, because you probably have a preconception of what it's going to be like if you do meet one. So you could probably walk right by one and miss him, because it doesn't fit your preconception of what a sage is going to be like. You know, it could be the guy wheeling the market basket down the avenue full of plastic bags. Could be. So then I just want to mention a couple of his statements, teachings. Having to do with the middle way, which is Buddha's main teaching. The world of appearances, you know, the world as it appears to us, is everything's relative to everything else. There's nothing absolute in the world of appearances. This teaching is thousands of years old, and modern physics has finally discovered it. In the world of appearances, everything is relative to something else. Everything is the effect of a cause, and the cause of some further effect. There is no inherent existence whatsoever in anything. It's all moving, it's all changing, and it's changing according to the laws of causation. So out here it's all relative. Not as in it doesn't matter what you do, but as in there's no absolutes, there's no finality out here. And in shunyata, what he calls shunyata, which is usually translated as emptiness, he says shunyata is free of assertions. So if you can experience emptiness, you'll notice there are no assertions. Then he says, if you see appearances as inevitably relative, and shunyata as free of assertions, and you think those two are separate things, you know, appearances are invariably relative, okay. Shunyata is free of assertions. Emptiness, free of assertions, okay. He says, if you see those things as separate, Buddha's intention remains unknown. And you can kind of understand one in a way, and you can kind of understand the other one, but if you see them as separate, Buddha's intention, he says, remains unknown. And when they are simultaneous, those two concepts, when they are simultaneous and not altered, the mere sight of relativity becomes sure knowledge free of objective habits. Appearances eradicate absolutism, because it's all relative. Shunyata eliminates nihilism. And then you know that shunyata manifests as causality, and you're freed from extremes and views. He also said that since he'd mastered all the lineages and so forth, he didn't encourage anyone to follow his path. He simply said, but he did indicate to people around him, like, these are the different stages I've been through and the different kinds of awakenings I've had. These are all possible to anybody. But he told people to take what you can use. So he had no particular thing for everybody. He said, take what you can use. Which is the same thing that Dalai Lama usually ends his talks on. Take what you can use. Yeah. Okay. Then just a discipline here. He said it's a great privilege to be born into a human form, which we in the West pretty much are unaware of. He says it's a matter of gratitude. Like, once you realize you have one, you should be instantly grateful. One, because they're hard to obtain. And two, because it's the only form of life which can seek enlightenment on behalf of all beings. But this form that we have has to be made receptive to spiritual truths. Like, fine, we're all walking around, I can seek enlightenment. All right, but how do you get receptive to it? Receptivity requires cultivation of a fundamental ethical sensitivity, which is translated into moral practice. This is Tsongkhapa teaching. So the first step in becoming spiritually receptive is to become ethically sensitive. Have some sensitivity to what's ethical, and then translate that into your life. That's one prong on the practice. No matter what lineage you're in, one prong is ethical sensitivity, cultivation. Second prong is you have to take a positive line of action regarding your karmic inheritance. You got to deal with your karma. Yeah, it's a bummer. It's like Donovan said in that song, you got to pick up every stitch. So positive line of action regarding one's karmic inheritance through self-purification and restoration of broken vows in this and previous lives.